This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello. I feel like it's been 24 hours since I've seen you, Karen.
It has been less than 2-4 HR. I was trying to be cute. Sorry, it didn't work.
Hey, it worked.
I doubted myself.
That was adorbs.
What's your favorite slang these days, Chris?
I just like to abbreviate pretty much any word.
Sure.
Any I'm being totally sarcastic. I have a problem with abbreviating words, especially when the abbreviation is like the same syllables.
Where it's not really saving time. There's not an efficiency element happening.
For instance, there's a bar near my house called Little Joy. Pretty easy to say Little Joy. A lot of people call it LJ. I think that that's the same amount of effort, really, pound for pound. Don't you agree?
Let's have a couple minutes of silence.
Yeah.
I have the same feeling where I think, it doesn't make me mad or anything, but I do observe a lot of people putting a ton of effort, it seems, into thinking of stuff like that when I don't get the benefit of it. Although, except for the benefit of sometimes if you feel maybe you were a deep down nerd growing up, that suddenly this is a thing that makes you feel cool. So it's like a self-soothing mechanism, maybe.
Yeah. Like, you know, our aunt or someone that actually says LOL, which is actually harder to say than laugh out loud.
It really is.
I mean, we'd have to consult with a linguist, but LOL is actually difficult. That's the... LOL is a tongue twister.
Did you hear there was a grandma type that thought LOL meant lots of love? So on Facebook, when Facebook came out, so there would be like a post about someone who died and she would go, thinking of you, LOL. And she would put LOL on everything.
Oh my God.
Inappropriately. It's the best.
That makes me want to cry. Everything does these days.
Chris, are you okay?
Oh, it's just, I keep thinking about all the lots of laughs I have after someone passes. It just got to me.
It does make you feel kind of bad, huh?
Oh, I at funerals, it's me chuckling in the corner.
Giggling.
Oh, can't stop.
The one time at a funeral, it was a Catholic mass, and then we came back from receiving the Eucharist at communion, and you have to go kneel in your pew and think about what a bad person you are.
Yeah.
And so me and my sister went back, and my dad was already in the pew, and he was kneeling, so his pant leg was pulled up, and he was wearing a pair of socks that said, "I'm 60, with an exclamation point, and my sister and I could not stop laughing. It was like at the height of the most serious, quiet part of the funeral.
And he was probably getting mad, and it's like, hey, it's your fault, funny socks.
You put on the most hilarious socks you could find for this funeral, sir.
Yeah, you're showing them off almost on purpose. I'm very excited for today's guest.
I am too.
Not only does he make me laugh pretty effortlessly, he's someone I haven't seen for a long time. And we'll talk about the last time I saw him, because maybe there's a story there.
Let's hope so. Yeah, he plays clubs and colleges all over the country.
Oh, so many colleges. A lot of clubs and colleges.
Lots of them.
And you know him as an actor as well. Put your hands together at home. Clap alone for Josh Fadem, please.
Woo!
Josh.
Hi. Thanks for having me on this podcast. I already know that it's going to be a lot of fun. Spoilers to those listening already.
Spoilers.
Yeah, because you were just listening to our warm-ups.
Yes.
And even if there weren't a lot of yucks in there, there was yuck potential.
No, there was yucks and yuck potential. I mean, in fact, I had to stifle myself from LMAO, love my fucking ass off. LMFAO, LMAF, love my ass and fuck off. I was rolling on the floor loving.
Yes. The love. It's all here.
Yeah.
You look good, Josh.
Thanks, Chris.
You look
so
a young Mike Patton from Faith No More.
Oh, ooh. I do. I always thought he was handsome.
He's very handsome. Hey,
is he known for being handsome?
Yes, he is.
Okay, very much so.
I always thought he was handsome. Even with the first video, the epic video.
Yeah.
There's a slang word I don't use in the connotation they use. I don't call things epic in that way.
No, never have.
No, I don't think if I have, it wasn't when it started catching on in the way that it's now caught on and probably come and gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that was an epic thing, or that's so epic, or what an epic fail, or whatever.
Yes.
Right.
I wouldn't use that.
It was very overused in the snowboard community to describe the quality of snow.
Oh. Right.
When epic snow. Oh, how was it today up there? It was epic. And I lived in a community where I would cringe every time I heard it. And then pretty soon, wouldn't you know it, I started saying epic.
Oh, I know when that happens and you feel like, what have I become?
Yeah. That's when I moved away and became a comedian.
You had to move away from the language of the area.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I'm glad.
And now look what I've become.
I have
Josh's.
Oh, yeah. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, maybe this is what you're going to say. Were you going to say that you do have a piece of slang that you like to use?
Mm-hmm. It is a tough one, and I may not know it until it comes out. It might come out organically, but it did.
Okay.
I do steer clear of using the modern slang that, whatever's online or whatever I'm hearing. Yes. Mm-hmm. And if I start to notice it gets said a lot, I start to resent it.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know what that means, if I'm just older or why I start to, maybe because it's like the equivalent of like water cooler humor. And I really hate on a television show when there's like a young character or a quirky character, and they try to plug stale terms like a character goes, "I'm totes, blah, blah, blah."
Yeah. Hashtag something.
Yeah. These are supposed to be substitutions for interesting character or a funny character or whatever. Oh my God, I'm totes freaking out over here or whatever I don't like that.
A really fun version of noticing when how out of touch the show Saved by the Bell was, because clearly you're realizing it's being written by a bunch of old white guys in a writing room, and they're writing for high school kids.
Yeah.
And so all the slang is like, oh, that kid's a good egg. or whatever. It's something that kids didn't say in the 80s, but it's just a room of dudes with catheters writing.
I'm not, gee golly, I'm not so peachy after all.
Yeah, exactly. It's just Leave It to Beaver language. Oh.
I did think of a thing, something you said about, oh, whenever I said, what have I become? I thought, I have a joke that I make to, if I'm ever visiting a friend and they've got kids, you know what I mean? Especially in Oklahoma, because it's where I, like, if I see someone, like my friend Rob has a son named Harvey. And if I, when I met Harvey or we have dinner at his house and Harvey's running around, every time he passes by, I go, hey, Harvey, my name's Josh. I'm friends with your dad. Which is like, you know, I just, I feel like someone always said, hey, are you Bruce's son? My name's so-and-so. I'm friends with your dad. And I was at a friend of mine, like last year's name, his name's Chris, and he has a son named Miles. Oh, this is Miles. Hey, Miles, I'm Josh. I'm friends with your dad. And did the joke again. And then, oh, about a week later, I was at the park walking my dog, and there was a playground. The park's connected to a school playground. And I see a kid, I go, oh, that kid looks kind of familiar. And he started looking at me like, that guy looks kind of familiar. And I realized, oh, is that Chris's son? I said, hey, are you Chris's son? And he nods yes. I go, oh, I'm Josh. I'm friends with your dad. And then I stopped and I said, oh, my God.
You organically said
I became the thing.
Character.
Yes,
the person
I became the
that
character.
That you mocked so
yes.
terribly.
See, yeah. now I understood all those men who said, I'm friends with your dad, what they were going through
yeah,
as I was
yeah.
growing up.
Well, that's a way of saying I'm not a pedophile.
Yeah,
but
in
not.
The
80s.
I'm friends with your dad. No,
hands up, yep.
locked eye contact, but this was only because you remind me of a friend of mine.
No funny business.
Nothing mean. I have a dog, which I do not want you to pet. Excuse me.
Stay away.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 80s, you had to kind of explain yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, around you just everyone was being kidnapped. You know, you have to say, right. "Hey, I just want you to know, I know your parents."
Yeah,
yeah, and then but then the kidnappers use that line, I'm sure too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. That's right.
All they had to say is, "I know your parents, Brad and Linda," and they were pretty likely to get the name. You know, get some parents' names right.
I was on the cover of the local paper because I would walk kids to school, because I had a stop sign. So I could walk myself to school. And then they started bringing me to a daycare before kindergarten. So a photographer for the newspaper multiple times put me in the paper. And this is like an 80s thing. I don't know why they did it. They literally put Chris Fairbanks walks his friend to school. His parents are named Lynn and Jim, and he lives at 105 Kensington Avenue. Like they put my address, they put my parents' name, they put everything you need to lure me. And I don't know, to this day, I can't figure out why they would do that. And I've been meaning to go get it, go to the library and find that on
the microfilm.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, I gotta prove it. I gotta prove that was the caption.
But. Well, if you did, I hope we can steer the conversation in a different direction. But I was gonna say, if you did tragically get abused in some way and you mm-hmm. are looking for a settlement, I think you have someone to sue.
Yeah,
I think you've got a case with this microphone. Yeah. Here is the evidence. They put you in the firing line of the perverts and you want to collect.
It's funny, but it's a grievance I have that happened in my 40s, and I still want to blame that article.
Sure.
I was walking that same route. Yeah.
I if it weren't for this, I would have nailed that audition for The Office.
Yeah.
Son of a bitching newspaper.
You ruined my career. Yeah. Oh, gosh. My favorite thing, Josh, that you've done, I really like you on Better Call Saul, but you're—
Thank you.
The,
Thank you.
Liz Lemon's, what were you, like her agent or something?
Uh-huh. Simon was the character's name. He was a pet dog agent.
Yeah, you were so funny on that. Because on that, you were a version of yourself. On Better Call Saul, you're totally different than who you are. You're like a cool, aloof guy. But
I like
watching
that you think he's cool.
Yeah, he is kind of cool. Well,
He's like a video guy, you know. He's like the guy that's like, "Hey, man, we got to get this thing done." You're very businesslike, that I observed.
Yeah, 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 I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's what we're saying is you're a good actor because you're being someone that I don't know you to be.
Mm. You have range. He has range.
Look at him. Oh, it's interesting.
It's interesting because you said that because about acting. You know, really, when you're acting, you are using, no matter what character you're playing, you're using a piece of yourself to play. So, you know, that character does exist somewhere inside, you know, me somewhere. I'm sure I wouldn't take it out on a daily basis, but, you know, there is a piece of me in there somewhere. You know.
The faces of Josh. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, when, you know, you ever listen to like Terry Gross or Elvis Mitchell and when they get real, you know, serious and they, right. Thank you for that. Yeah. It's interesting because, and they'll ask a question like, so, but don't you think that there's a possibility that you da-da-da-da-da about the, and the album, when the album came out because your first book and when it was published, blah, blah, blah. But isn't it possible that blah, blah, blah question, one way of looking at it? Well, yes and no. They do that a lot.
Deep talks.
They go, ooh, well, yeah, yes, and it is, and it isn't. It is, and it isn't.
Isn't.
Yeah.
Which means it isn't. It is.
Yes, this is, isn't, actually. But thank you for that question. Yeah.
Everything else perfectly enunciated, except for
isn't.
Well, it's funny you ask that because Aziz is Ansari. And I.
Aziz says it isn't.
He just says it is.
He's a good friend.
Yeah.
I like to bring him up.
I asked him if it was. He said it isn't. But it is, you know, yes and no.
Does that answer your question, Terry?
Yeah, Terry. It gives me a lot to think about. You. Ooh, Terry Gross, she's one of those people, I don't want to know what she looks like. And if someone shows me a picture, I'm like, I didn't want to know. I liked coming up with it myself, you know?
What do you picture her to look like?
Yeah.
Well, I know what she's like.
Like a little lady with like, you know, kind of like, either like a bob haircut or a George Clooney ER when he had the Caesar haircut.
Yeah, angular haircut.
You're actually very close.
Emma, you think so? Just maybe she's got glasses.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe she's recently, you know, maybe when you saw her at one point when she was younger, she had a dirty blonde colored hair, but now she's gone totally gray, and you're like, oh. Terry went totally gray since I've seen her last.
Confident.
Because it looks more intellectual.
Right. Yes. Of course, Terry is not a dyer. She's not going to dye her hair.
No way.
No way.
Especially not in quarantine.
But if you want someone to take you seriously with what you're saying, it's best to let your hair go gray.
Yeah. Ooh, I got a little bit of gray and I love it.
Yeah.
I got like a one or two, you know, I love them.
I have all gray. I have to dye my hair every 3 weeks. Uh-huh. And I don't love it. But this is the difference between men and women. And I wanted to bring this up at the beginning.
Sure. Yeah. We can cut it.
This is my in.
Right. Just to introduce the premise.
We'll cut it back. Okay.
Yeah. So we're just starting now, beginning the conversation. And
Boy.
Karen, you had some, thanks for coming to my show now. You had something to say about gray hair. Go on.
Men and women. Different.
Wait, they're different.
They fight.
But how are they different?
Different hair. Different cares.
That interesting. Different hair because different hair cares. They cares different about their hair.
Cares now, different.
Thank you for listening to Talk Topic.
Talk Topic. You know where men and women aren't different anymore? The world of soccer. Did you see today?
No.
Equal pay in professional soccer.
That's right.
Equal prize money. It's a start. It's a start, and it started with soccer.
It's a positive. It's true. In a negative time, it's a huge positive.
The women's soccer league will make the same amount of money as the men's soccer league, is what you said?
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. And so do soccer players, they all get paid the same?
I wonder.
There's no like executive producer. There's like consulting producer.
I bet a
staff
goalie,
soccer player.
A goalie makes more than like a fullback. I don't know if that's a position.
I don't have fake soccer talk
Nor do I.
Yeah, I don't have a good, you know, when the improvisers, they come up with the fake ones. Love it when they do that.
God, some of them are just so knowledgeable about every single thing in detail where they can snap right into like a soccer bit.
You know, if what all character, good, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
I can't do it. I can't even do a fake one. But sometimes the funny improvisers, they don't know about it, but they just got a good, you know, jargon. They tap into the jargon talk real good.
Yeah.
I think I've seen you do that. You've seen me do it? Yeah. Where you confidently bullshit and people, if they're watching, they're like, I think he knows exactly what he's talking about.
Right.
But you're just rolling with it, baby.
I've seen you do it.
I've seen you. I've admired you do it.
Karen, I've seen you do it.
Wait,
too.
Have you? This is the best.
Hey, but Karen, have you seen Josh do it?
I guess it's probably, you know, sometimes you got it and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. It's true. It's based on the night. It's based on the drive over. It's based on your experience, how comfortable you feel. Here's what I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Improv. And Josh, have you done both improv and stand-up comedy?
Yes.
Yes. Do you find it's just improv is easier because there's more help, there's more support, and there's more acceptance of whatever's happening?
Yeah, the
as opposed
acceptance.
To stand-up comedy where you have to do it right every 15 seconds or you're failing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the audience, the animosity,
right?
I think, because we talked about this with Mary Holland, I feel like the reason I started to have animosity towards improv is the audience was always on their side.
Right.
And they're like, hey, I don't care that that didn't work. They're just making it up. But the minute someone doesn't like your stand-up, they cross their arms and they actually want to fight you.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't see that with bad improv. Like, I don't see people, boo!
Yeah. I remember like when I did the Groundlings and every class, it was like, you know, they give a base applause for the scene to begin. So you're walking in on, you know,
positivity.
You're walking in on a heavenly, you know, even in like the class, okay, that was good. And yay, okay, go, you know. And the shows were like that too. And I guess it probably was the same at the UCB improv shows, which I didn't do a lot of improv there. But I agree, I guess. I mean, sometimes with stand-up, though, I guess it's just, it's case by case, you know. Sometimes it's like, wow, I'm on stage, can do no wrong. And then it's on stage and I'm like, hey, I'm doing all wrong, you know. Sometimes it's like, oh, I lost him. Oh, I got to work hard to get him back. But I've also done improv where it's like, wow, I have no idea how to hook into what, you know. If you're in like, I don't know, stale improv mode, you're like, I don't know how to add on to what they're saying. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I forgot the rules. I forgot the tools.
Yeah. That was his idea. Yeah. I'll let him go with it.
Ask me any question about comedy. I'll only talk about failing.
That's what sticks in your mind.
Yeah.
Did you ever...
Don't call me funny. I've been bad.
I can't take it.
I can't take the compliment. I've got to poo-poo them. Don't compliment me too hard because I've been bad before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen you do stand-up where you are making it all up. And maybe there's a few jokes in there, but... you are just flying, and in a way that I haven't seen a lot of people do, where you were actually making it all up. Like, when you did those whole shows where you're just falling down for... First of all, I thought at some point you would have had to have gotten injured.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Did you ever see... Karen, did you see Josh do his 30 minutes of falling down?
I never saw 30 minutes. I've seen videos of him fall down and I've seen live shows.
Right, right. There's a time where you're cleaning, that video where you're cleaning up in the park and you roll down the hill and stop at a trash can and then immediately start cleaning up again.
Uh-huh.
But let me tell you about the things you've done, Josh.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. It makes it feel special.
But the show where you get tangled
and
up in the stool.
And if people are listening and they don't know it, they better go check it out somehow.
They can check it out.
Yeah.
Josh Fadem, F-A-D-E-M, YouTube. But I always thought you had to have gotten injured at some point wrestling with a stool and a mic stand.
I did.
And the cord. how bad I knew it. I didn't even know this, but I knew
Let's get the deets.
Yeah. I broke my wrist twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
Well, Same one?
I did it in 2014, real bad. I had to have surgery. And then in 2019, and then I kind of slowed down doing so much of that because I would just do it recklessly always. And then in 2019, I was doing a longer show and I was like, I'm on fire. It's going great. I could do no wrong. Might as well throw in some of that. I didn't do a lot of that physical shtick at this show. Might as well throw it. Oh, I bet I can go nuts. And I'm feeling the, and then I did something and then I slapped my arm on the ground strangely. And I was like, that didn't hurt real bad, but something felt weird. And I could feel in my, you know, pinky and index pinky and ring finger. I was like, something seems strange. And then it was mostly fine. But by the end of the night, when I got home, I couldn't straighten my arm out. And then, I think I eventually went to the doctor and he said, I think you broke your radial neck, which is, I guess, a part of the arm. But
they call it a neck.
Yeah, they call it, it's right. I don't know if this is airing if you could, I'll have to describe it. The part of the arm that's near the elbow or something. I think because of the first break, probably it made a different part of the arm susceptible. I mean, it wasn't a major, I didn't have to do anything major, but except for physical therapy for the second one. But the big one was, you know, 2014. It was a show at UCB. And I remember, I felt like the audience was kind of stiff and I was like, as soon as I walked out, I go, oh, this is kind of a dud. And so I started saying something and then I think I just tossed my body in a really reckless way with my feet in the air and landed. And I'm not sure how I landed, but I like felt the, oh, shoot, you know, which I've had before in different ways.
Did they see your wrist?
Yeah, I went, oh, well, first... Before I even looked at it, I said, oh, I think I broke my wrist. And then the audience went, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I was going to ask. Did they laugh at you while your bone was
They laughed sticking? That. And then I looked and then I saw the bone, like not, you know, protruding. I said, that's not what the wrist is supposed to look like. Oh. And then I said, oh, I really broke it. And then they went, ooh. And then,
boo, they started booing.
I also had this, like, you know, the built-in comedian, you know, thing of commitment thing of like, show must go on. Yeah. You know, like, don't stop performing for nothing, you know? and then I started hearing that voice. And then I thought, does it? You know, this is UCB and I have a broken wrist. And I stood there for a second, like, I don't know what to do. I broke my wrist. Should I tell a joke? And then they were kind of like, we don't know. You know, they just stood there when I said, yeah, I guess I'll go to the hospital. I broke my wrist. Okay, bye. And then I remember like it was very, it was right after I came on stage. Like I went on stage, broke it immediately. And then I was like, oh, I better go. And I, you know, they bring you on to a song and then they play you off with a different song. And I remember like whatever the song was, it was like the same song right away, you know? And then I kind of wandered around the back of UCB, like embarrassed and kind of in shock. Like, I don't know what to do because it did really hurt and it did really look very broken, you know? And I was holding my wrist. And then I remember, I think it was Cody Fisher who was running the house at the time. She was like, Josh, are you okay? And I was like, I broke my wrist. And then I was like planning to just walk to my car and go somewhere. And then like, so someone that was working, you know, drove me to the emergency room. And
thank God.
Yeah.
And then there was a big write up in Variety about how you had a soft close. You didn't have a hard
day. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on one of those. You remember way back in the comedy days of LA and like, it was probably like 15, 16, 17 years ago at this point, the website that they put the reviews of everyone's sets on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
remember those days?
Yeah, yeah.
And the biggest fear that we had was
a special thing, right?
Yeah, it was a special thing. And the biggest fear was like, oh, I hope they don't write something. Hope they write I was funny on a special thing.
I fully forgot about that. I would look up my name to punish myself and read what people said.
Yeah.
It was before you paid attention to YouTube comments. Yeah.
Yeah, there were some names on there. I don't remember them all. I just remember, I hope Jouster thought I was funny or whatever. You know?
I used to look at that website from work because I had stopped doing stand-up comedy and I didn't, this, it was such a strange time because it was like I stopped doing stand-up to work, to take a TV job in like 2002. And that's kind of when like the internet became a thing. And it was just a whole new generation and a very different way that comedy started working. And so like just every once in a while, I would look for my name on a website like that when I was never doing comedy.
Do they remember
the weirdest.
Me? Am I relevant?
Yeah. It was very sad.
Maybe nostalgically, I'll be mentioned.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to, which is like, but it why would that happen?
It started out like a Mr. Show like fan site. Or was it started out a Tenacious D fan site and a Mr. Show, like a both Mr. Show. So, I mean, that makes sense.
Really?
A little, but.
No,
I mean,
it makes sense that like, you know, there would be some Karen discussion on there.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But also, I think it was more like, it was like an M-bar-ish kind of thing. I just remember
M-bar,
looking
at Largo. Those were, oh, if you could get up at, if only I could get up at Largo on Fairfax across from Kibitz Room, not the future one.
Yeah, yeah. And we knew about the future one. Yeah. That's how thought forward thinking we were.
Yeah. I don't want to get, I sure would like to get on the future one, but I really want to get on the Fairfax one here in 2003. That's where I want to.
The present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, I did not know you were I've seen you go full Buster Keaton, like a guy who comedically broke his back.
Right. Had a broken neck for like, and when he was older, he was like, your neck's broken, says the doctor. Still.
Oh, that was one of my bits.
Yeah.
Where I fell off a building into a moving car.
It's actually, here's where my put my nerd hat on. It's was this short where he falls out of a water tower or water thing and then the water floods on top of him.
Oh,
and when
God.
He fell out, he hit a railroad track. Oh. Rail, and he stood up and it's on film, supposedly, unless
was
I have it wrong.
The General?
No, I think it was one of the shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, you said he broke his neck?
I guess he broke his neck. And by hitting, like, it was, like, on a railroad and, like,
yeah. And then they just put it in the movie. There, that scene.
He didn't know it. He put it in the movie. He was like, it's my movie.
I like it.
He probably didn't know that he broke. He's like, it still hurts, but good shot.
Yeah. The studio, which I own, won't approve if I bow out early.
Right. Which I own until the studio that I own now, but will eventually be sign a contract with MGM where I won't have the freedom that I have now to perform with a broken neck. He said it like that.
Yeah, exactly. He knew.
He knew.
He was his
He knew it was coming.
Then even back then, he was like, God, I hope I get to perform at the future Largo.
Right. I hope this is where I get discovered by Raymond Rohauer, who will discover my films in a basement, and then I'll have a resurgence and start being in TV commercials.
Yep,
hopefully that will happen.
He knew the names. Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Josh, when you were you like it, as a teen, was the physical stuff something that you did like for fun or to make your friends laugh? Like, how did you get to the point where you were doing stuff like that on stage? Was it a thing that you
I probably did like lots of falling and stuff, and like, you know, I actually was in middle school, like I was real into Charlie Chaplin, you know. I'm sure I saw the Robert Downey Jr. biopic, and then that made me watch the real Chaplin stuff, and then I got more into Buster Keaton, I think, like, you know, it wasn't on TV as much. And I got more into Buster Keaton, like, in my late teens and stuff. But I would try to copy those guys without any kind of training or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I don't do it really as much now just because I'm like, well, getting older or whatever. I did definitely try to do it and be that shticky guy or whatever.
You know what's funny is I interviewed Jackie Chan once for some movie press junket.
Wow.
And he was really sweet. And he had a translator. He actually doesn't speak English very well. He learns lines for movies.
Phonetically
and
stuff.
That.
Me
yeah.
Too.
But he said his heroes were Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. And he's not a martial artist. The guy who was his translator was actually also his fight choreographer guy. But he said he just wanted to physically be a physical comedian.
Yeah.
Like, he loved comedy and he loved physical comedy. That blew me away because he became this action star.
Yeah. Well, I think that he's credited for being like one of the first, you know, martial arts stars to react with pain. And that's kind of why it was funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I think they say.
Yeah.
I know it. I don't know why I'm acting like, I think they said this. Like, I just don't want to like alienate everyone by turning into a video store clerk. Well, actually, the reason that he did it was because he would portray pain. So, and everyone say, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, he is a drunken master.
It
works.
Yeah, how long did you work at that video store? What was that?
I worked at the video store Cinephile right by the New Art. For 10 years from 2003 to 2013.
Well, Josh, did you, was that, I just remembered that there was a stand-up show there.
Yeah.
Was that your stand-up show?
I think I had both of you on it.
Yeah, I did it a few times.
Yeah.
I was very excited to do that because it was such a cool, hip video store.
Yeah.
And then partly because I was doing stand-up again.
Yeah.
I was back.
I haven't been doing stand-up or really live performing since the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last time I saw you, I showed up for a show in the basement of a bar in Denver, and I was, because it's in the basement.
It was like February 2020.
That's when we last saw each other?
Yeah. I think it was February 2020.
The
pretty
last
sure.
free month.
I was like, what am I? I don't want to be here. And you were there. I was in a bad mood and you were in a great mood and you put me in a good mood and then you killed it. You were so funny. Do you remember how well that show went for you?
I do. Yeah. I do remember that show because it was like one of the last ones, I feel like, before the pandemic. Yeah.
And you were just on the whole time and you were riffing. Most of it, I feel, was unplanned.
I would say about half of it, if I'm my memory. I had the set, but then there was like, I had some family there.
Right.
And some friends, you know, that lived in Colorado. And then I remember that show, there was a guy who I'm sure he laughed at everyone this loud, but he was having a hoot hollering time.
Yes.
Just laughing. Ha! Ha!
Yeah.
Like it hurt.
Bald.
Like you
said,
like every
guy.
Joke shot, we were shooting him and he was laughing.
Older guy. Bald. Yeah. He's a fixture in audiences in Denver.
Yes. Yeah, sweet and guy. Yeah.
His name is Dave.
I think Dave Caldwell is his name.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're Facebook friends now.
And I love his laugh. A lot of people are thrown off by it.
No, nah, fuck those people. You need that guy.
I know, me too. I made a point. He was banned from a show banned from certain comics.
Who banned him? Let's out the banner now.
I can't.
So no
I
one
can't.
Goes I'll, to that I'll, banner.
I'll tell you after we're done recording.
You don't want to smear him? You don't want to ruin
I
their...
I can't do another campaign.
Right, because then you'll be banned from the banner.
Yeah, exactly.
You need that banner, huh?
Everything is cyclical. Bands
if that
are,
banner's listening, but I haven't been doing stand-up for 20 years, so you can text me his name and I'll say, I think the banner is Jerry Jipperson.
Jippy.
Jippy's out. Jippy's out.
Jerry Jips. But I made a point last time I saw Dave Caldwell to like say, this is my favorite audience person in Denver. I'm so excited whenever he's up front at a show, and I could tell it made him feel good because he... is so dedicated to watching.
He loves,
all the shows, all the.
Why would you have a problem with the person laughing loud? Is because do people misinterpret what he's doing?
It is a startling. He. It is a version of what Josh did, but louder. Like he just goes, bah! Like it sounds like a dog. Someone's abusing a dog.
Do you remember James Adomian when we were younger used to have a laugh so loud? Like I remember, I've known James forever, and like we did the growlings and stand up and all that, laugh, and just it was usually you would hear from the back and you would know like James is here, good, but Dave Caldwell. As soon as I was done with the show or later, I was like, he's a fixture. And then I felt like, I bet you that whatever shtick I was doing about enjoying his laugh, like on stage, I'm like, I thought I was so original when I was saying that. I bet like half the comedians are like, what's going on with your great laugh? I love this laugh. Oh, this laugh is a, can we give it up for this guy's laugh? It's like I could do anything and get a laugh from this guy. It's great.
Yeah, I think he heard that a lot, and I think he appreciated it.
Like, yeah, he must. How do you feel when your riff, when you realize your riff isn't original and your riff is a cliche?
Yeah, I hate that. When you're in a new city and it's like, yeah, everyone makes fun of our bridge that looks like a penis.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever done the thing where you think you're riffing on stage and it's really original and you realize you're just repeating someone else's joke?
The last comic.
I used to do that. You know who I do? I used to do that all the time with Blaine Capatch's jokes because I've known Blaine forever. It's like when I started in San Francisco, he was like a... you know, fixture in San Francisco. I've seen him do stand up so much that like, and I love his comedy so much that I remember all of it. So then it'd be like one topic would come up and I'd be like, say something. And then I'd have to go, that's Blaine Capatch's joke. Like thinking that I'm just like, oh yeah, I just had the best idea. And it's like, no, you didn't have a perfect joke appear in your head out of the blue. Yeah. That didn't happen.
I was going to say, I can remember there was a period of time when I was starting to do more like, you know, coming of age as a comedian and you start riffing more on stage or you're like, hey, I can just like stretch this out. I can just keep talking. I can keep finding jokes or whatever. And I realized like, I'm doing it, but sometimes I'm doing it like Andy Kindler does it. And I realized it was like, I had a little bit of like persona theft or riff theft or whatever. Yeah.
That is, and I've like, Karen just said, sometimes I'd take it so far where I would do his line, which is, or a third thing that is funny.
Yeah. Like you come up with two examples. Yeah. And a third one.
And a third thing that caps it off in a way that you enjoy. Like I've said, I'm like, oh, I just did basically his material.
Yeah. But I think it's because when you see a person and they make you laugh so hard, when you believe yourself to be this experienced comedian that's seen it all and you know what I mean? Like no one's funny, whatever. And then you see someone that does it, like it really would burn itself into my brain.
Yeah.
So then it is, you know, that is the difficulty of like riffing and giving yourself the chance to be original or think of something new. But at the same time, your brain is already filled with all these people that you adore that have made you laugh so hard that you're like, oh my God, I'm going to remember this forever.
So they should take it as a compliment. Right. Even when we early on were doing this podcast and we would joke about having advertisers, I would make up fake commercials and that's a Blaine Capatch joke.
It's Blaine Capatch.
This moment brought to you by Werther's Candies or whatever. Yeah. Like he did that all the time. I'm now realizing.
Another Blaine one I'm sure I did on shows at one point or another that I feel like is totally Blaine is something like, you know, oh, we have a clip of that right now or something.
Yeah.
You know, let's see the clip right now.
Let's go to the clip.
Yeah. Let's go to the clip. Yeah.
Completely. Completely.
I always felt like, you remember also the thing that comedians are not really so much up in arms, you don't hear about, but there was a window of time, probably like, I don't know, 05 to 012 or something where
joke thieves, thieves. If you're a joke thief, we will kill you for being a joke thief.
But now it's, I don't know. There's way more egregious offenses, I guess, in comedy.
Yeah.
But you don't hear people talking about that guy's a joke thief and he's going down. We're taking his career away for being a joke thief. I always was more off put by cadence theft.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That always seemed like a more, you know, persona theft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember
I'd rather hear a stolen joke than another comic trying desperately to sound like Kyle Kinane.
Yeah.
When they talk.
Yeah.
Or where I started in Austin, it was also the era and the state where he came up, but everyone was trying to be edgy and sound like Bill Hicks.
Uh-huh.
Every open mic had four or five Bill Hicks wannabes.
Yes.
And they were actually smoking on stage and everything.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the biggest Bill Hicks thief was Dennis Leary, and he actually got famous from it.
Right, but
they're like, sorry if you're listening.
Sorry, Dennis.
Sorry, Denny.
Dennis, you've done well in your own right. Dennis, you got a great career. Dennis, you turned it into your own thing.
Yes, I love the fireman show.
Dennis, Dennis, rescue me.
Dennis, listen.
Rescue me from this situation, Dennis, because I feel backed against the wall, Denny.
if you don't get people pissed at you about a bagging on Denny, you're going to get a lot of Denny fans saying, I listen to your podcast. You said the thing about Denny. I'm out of here. I'm not going to listen no more because you got to apologize to me. Not Denny, me. Denny.
No, come back.
Come back, that listener.
Come back, one listener.
Nope. You say goodbye to Jouster / Denny / 6ix9ine.
Jouster Jipperson. Yeah. Yeah.
Your dog is very cute.
Oh, he's a very good boy.
How long have you had that little boy?
Bobby, I found him in March 2010. Can you believe it? That's a long time.
I've met that little boy.
Yeah, that's Bobby.
I always see that dog and I'm like, I'm friends with your dad.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby, I'm friends with your dad.
Hi, Bobby.
With your dad.
And then he bites me.
No, I have a dog that looks a lot like Bobby.
Yeah,
like, she will not listen to me. Normally she comes, Blossom, where are you?
Blossom.
Come here.
Let's have a dog off. It's visual and people love to hear it.
Because when Bobby first stood up, Bobby has two tan spots on him.
Uh-huh. Little coffee stains.
Yes. So does she.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. She looks a lot like, hey, come here. Would you? Frank. Not you, Frank. He's not coming anyway. I don't know where she went. Blossom.
Is Blossom named for the sitcom character?
Blossom was named this when I got her from the rescue, and I was so scared of the rescue people that I didn't want to change her name because I was afraid they'd find out and somehow come back and be like, you agreed actually in your paperwork that you would never change the dog's name.
Is that
like,
something that you really agreed that they really make you agree to?
So funny.
I don't think so, but they were like, they came and checked my house to make sure the yard was fenced. They were like, they were kind of intense in a way that I wasn't used to. So I assumed that they would be like, if I changed her name, it was like, here's my new dog. Because I kind of wanted to name her Birdie.
We will be listening to your podcast.
Check all my content.
Yeah.
Blossom, come here.
Birdie. Well, Bobby, when his name was found, when I found him, I found out that he had a name from the previous owner, and it was Bobby, which I said, no.
No. No.
And
Wait, what?
And so I wouldn't, I said, I'm not calling this guy that. And so I thought, I won't want to confuse him too much, but he does look like his name's Bobby. And so he's Bobby. He took to it.
Yeah.
Were the people from a different country or so? What's Bobby?
Yeah.
I don't know. I did speak to the previous owner on the phone. There was no, you know, accent or anything.
Yeah. Bobby sounds like,
Maybe. Maybe it means something.
I bought a car, my first car that I paid cash for when I was like early 20s was a Buick Skyhawk. It was white, like your dog's.
Uh-huh, and with the owner, two brown spots?
Yeah, two coffee stains. That was me. That's how I christened the car. I broke a coffee on it, the hood. But the woman that I bought it from asked me to please promise to call the car Orville.
Wow.
And I thought she was kidding, and she said, will you continue to call the car Orville? And I was like, oh, you're crazy. Oh, I thought that you were making a joke. Yes, I will call the car Orville. And you know what? I did call the car Orville. Like, in, hey, do you mind if I park Orville? Because it was funny to my friends.
I would have liked to, if you had started this story. Well, when I drove Orville, when I first got Orville, because you still got to call it Orville. That agreement doesn't end. You said you'd call the car Orville, and now you can't just call it a Buick Skylark that you used to drive.
Skyhawk. Much sportier. I just want to let people know I still have style.
That car talk just reminded me of the movie My Cousin Vinny, which I caught on TV recently, and that is a funny movie.
Yes, it is. It holds up.
It does. And Marissa Tomei's performance, better than ever. Ages well. Very funny.
She's such a good accent.
Great accent.
Such a good.
Great timing. What were you going to say?
Great concept.
Well-written script. Lots of good setups that pay off later in a not annoying way.
A script written by Dale Lawner.
What?
Dale Dale wrote that and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and
the best,
The War of the Roses, and all of his movies are about jilted lovers or divorce or getting revenge. And I sat next to him on an airplane going to the Aspen Comedy Festival. He just said he is a filmmaker, but he kept like pointing people out on the airplane. He's like, see her? We used to date. Oh, man, she was a real train wreck. And I'm like, I think she can maybe hear you. but he went to my show. And then afterwards, he sent me an email. He's like, pretty good stuff. But I wonder if in this joke, if you could tighten it up. He gave me notes.
Dale, stick to the script.
He also offered to
dial it back.
He's like, if you ever want to learn about screenwriting, I'll sit down with you and we could think of ideas. And I really wish I had done that.
You might still be able to. You got his email? You still got that email?
Honestly, I'm worried now that he's listening along with Dennis Leary.
We'll cut that part, Dale's. From this moment forward, we're all pro Dale.
Dale. The whole conversation started because we're all in agreement how great Dale is.
He's unbelievable.
The point is, he was a nice guy. He had a lot of anger, I think, towards his last relationship.
You know, that's normal. I just had a therapy session before this started, and I'm still sorting through my own stuff. You know?
Yeah.
So we're all works in progress. Dale's a work in progress. He's probably, hopefully he's moved past some of those issues with the girl on the airplane or.
Yeah. He has a new movie. I can't remember what it's called,
really?
it had been like since the 90s and he has a new good movie. Yeah.
Those are all good comedies that he rattled. Yeah. Out. You know what?
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is, I remember seeing it in the theater and my friend and I literally doing the gasp when the reveal comes at the end. We were just like, what? Yeah. Like that whole thing was so awesome.
Yeah.
We all said, it was Glenn Headley the whole time. Glenn Headley's a dirty rotten scoundrel too.
She's the true dirty rotten scoundrel.
What was the name of her? The thing, the viper or the eagle or the she had a con artist nickname.
I can't remember.
We're gonna look it up later.
I gotta watch it again. I gotta watch. Let's have a Dale Lahner film festival.
Yeah.
Yep.
Comedies from that era, studio comedies from that era had they had like scripts, I feel like, and like they had a script written. It wasn't just like all improv with, with a handful of the up and coming comedians of the day peppered in. And they had real titles, not just like The Mall, The House, The Dog, Tag, Door, Bad Mom. Bad stinker, date night, rough night, bad night, hard night, house night, night house, night before, young night, the bad night, bad mom, bad stinker, bad grandpa, bad dirty grandpa, bad lawyer, bad plumber, bad office Christmas party, identity thief, bad fight, bad boss, horrible boss, the boss, horrible bosses. Horrible buses too. These are all the real comedies now.
Yep.
Like it's
true.
Like the pitches are like
I can watch that. I got an idea.
Okay, this is as funny. Imagine
I got
an
adjective and I got a noun. Yeah. Get ready.
It's like this is the new IP in comedy is hey, what if there was a garbage man and he's bad?
Yeah. They have two dartboards and they spin them. One is of different occupations.
Yeah.
And the other one is of different situations.
Yeah.
Or emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it landed on sad firemen.
Yeah.
And action.
Yeah.
He comes sliding down the pole crying. I don't want to go to the fire. I don't know.
This fireman is a bad fireman. Sad fireman. Bad.
Sad.
Okay, we can do sad. This one's sad. It's not bad.
The studio notes come back and they're like, a sad fireman seems depressing. Could it be a bad fireman?
Maybe he could be more bad.
Yeah, he accidentally starts fires.
Ooh,
starring Drew Barrymore.
Here's the thing I don't like in modern comedies.
Uh-huh. You don't like in modern comedies?
No. Well, the trend in modern comedies I don't like, which I think are from those bad night, sad night era, is people now believe that you need to sound like you're improvising and you are also have a light stutter. Because it's like there's always that vibe where it's like, can't you just read your line and say it with a certain, like, a certain zip and we'll be out of this scene? Like, there's, it feels like there's people just kind of like they're like, okay, both of you go over to the car wreck and then start, you know, just make it work around the car wreck and then see what happens. And it's that vibe where I'm like, I don't want anybody to see what happens. I want you to know what's going to happen.
Right.
I want you to hit every mark exactly and deliver a real good line when you get there.
I remember the first time I saw Juno, it there was a lot of stammering and like it was almost like a forced casualness to the line. Like, generally, I want you to say this. Like, even a script like Waiting for Guffman, where each page is like, they come in and talk about the show. The mayor comes in and changes the subject. Like, it was fully improvised. It's such an interesting script to read. I had a copy of it. But when you watch that, they're not stammering and stuttering and forcing, like, human mannerisms. They're that good at improvising.
That they don't, they're not plugging in a million ums and uhs in there.
No one wants your ums and uhs.
Or repeating the same line several times.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts. Or just like say it once like you mean it and you don't have to say it five times.
Yeah. What can you think of an example off the top of your head?
I don't want to name names or name projects names. Because of my career.
Right. We don't want to smear. Sometimes a joke, I mean, I feel like a fun joke that was always fun to do, at least at the shows that I ran, would be to name names of the things that suck. Yeah. You know, and I'd be like, no one's here. Like, guess what? Guess who sucks? and then you really shoot yourself in the career foot.
Yes,
but no one's watching. But someone might be.
Very 90s. The 90s, 90s comedy was very mean and very naming. That's how I would write comedy. It's just like, I saw the movie Stepmom and it sucked and here's why. And it's just like, but it's one way to go.
Right.
Maybe not the best way to go.
You said Drew Barrymore and I had a story, I'll confess, that...
Who said Drew Barrymore?
I did.
Just said Drew Barrymore a second ago.
Doing the bad fireman riff, and I said,
"I'll tell this story because I don't care."
There's the movie that they remade.
Got it.
So Drew, go.
So Drew, okay. So I used to run a show years ago in the basement of the Ramada Inn.
With Justin Long.
You were there?
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay, I can't believe you were there. So I'll tell you what I remember and then you tell me what you remember.
Were there often though.
Think they were, at least they weren't at my show often.
Okay.
No fighting, guys.
Okay.
They weren't fighting. No, we're excited.
I was there. I did not predict and I did not know you broke your wrist.
Okay. I didn't break my wrist this night. This had to have been like 2006 or something like that.
Okay.
And I would host his characters a lot of the times, just a silly character, and kind of stretch out the character between the acts, you know?
Yeah.
Or sometimes I'd just be myself. But this night I was doing some character. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember Drew Barrymore and Justin Long were there for some reason. Maybe their friend's girlfriend was doing stand-up or something like that.
Yes.
And
I'll say her name in a minute.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so... it was going well, and it was maybe, in my memory, a little tense because it was like, oh, there's a celebrity here. I didn't make any reference to it, but I do remember, like, it was a little stiff, but the show wasn't going badly. And then after her act, they got up and left, and I don't remember what I said, but I just unleashed. I just laid into – I just made the most, you know – I just went off on like, whatever, Drew Barrymore, you know, something about them being there. I just kept making jokes and I thought, oh, it'd be funny to say the meanest jokes possible or I don't even know what the mean joke would be. Oh, you were a little girl in E.T. You were, E.T. Yeah. Whatever. I have no idea what I would have come up with.
Go back to E.T.
Yeah. My God, I showed her. Anyway, I think it was probably mean. And then everyone was laughing really hard at the mean jokes about Drew Barrymore. And then the show went on. And then later, someone was like, Josh, they were there. They were standing, you know, you remember the Ramada that you're like, you can't, there's the doorway. They were right behind the stage.
There, and there's not a wall there. It was cutouts of like foliage, like.
Yeah. And maybe there's like a piece of paper blocking. Like I didn't see them in the hall. Like, you couldn't see someone pass. But there's nothing stopping them from hearing everything.
You can hear it perfectly back there. I remember that's how I used to watch the shows, is hang out back there.
Yeah.
They heard every word.
They heard every word. And I mean, in my memory, I was like, oh, the famous people were making the room uncomfortable. And so I felt like I was taking the piss out of it by making people relax by being like, yeah, who cares? God. And it was all kind of as a joke, but I remember, I remember feeling like, oops, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Were they like mad? Did they come back in or anything?
Well, there's a second part of the story, but Chris, what do you remember?
Well, I remember them having fun and they seemed like they were laughing at things, but I vividly remember thinking they were gone and then they were back. But I do not, and I'm not.
They did not come back to their seat after that, I'm sure.
I do not remember you being super mean and it being a whole thing. Like, I think pretty much everyone in the room thought they had left.
Right.
But they were behind, they were just behind talking to they're friends with a comic that we used to see all the time, Karen, at 101 Cafe. She was a waitress there and also a funny comic, but she was somehow friends with them. And they were there. I'm just confirming they were there to support, like you said, their friend. So it's
who
all
was
true.
It? You said you were going to say her name.
I know. Wouldn't it be great if there wasn't my family wasn't riddled with Alzheimer's. I also haven't seen her for a long time, but she was funny and I liked her, but I think she's not in comedy anymore.
She was friends with Drew Barrymore. Was she in a movie of theirs or something?
I'm not sure how she knew her. And even back then, I wanted to ask, like, how are you just friends with Drew Barrymore? Yeah.
AA?
Maybe. Maybe.
That's how anyone knows any celebrity.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's usually the connection.
They must have addiction problems.
Yes.
Celebrities don't just friend you. Yeah. You think a celebrity's gonna friend you? You gotta be addicted to something.
Yeah, you gotta
and give it up.
Yeah, you gotta give up addiction to make friends with a celebrity.
And help them give it up.
It's gotta be in LA.
Yeah, and it's gotta be at UCB across from the Celebrity Center. You gotta stumble over there for a get to know people brunch after boozing up at Birds.
In the early 90s, we had a friend who went to AA and he would come back from the meetings and always be like, hey, you know, Ozzy Osbourne was there. Or he would name the super famous people that would be at the meetings. So my other friend, Laura Milligan, she would be like, yeah, so-and-so is at his A meeting. Because it was never anonymous. So she just called it A.
His A.
Just alcoholics.
Yeah, alcoholics meeting. I go to AM.
Alcohol, what's the M stand for?
Meeting.
Oh, meeting. Damn it. I thought it was going to...
What's the opposite of anonymous?
Yeah.
Public?
Mononymous?
Monogamous? Anonymous.
Monogamous?
Has anyone made the joke? I feel like a joke I made once, I was like, that's too easy. I'm sure like probably someone like Chris has made that where it's like, oh, I'm addicted to workahol.
Well, I think the fact that I snort laughed at it lets you know that, yeah, I would have said that on stage.
Uh-huh.
And everyone would have groaned.
Yeah. You got to make some groaners. It's fun to make a groaner.
Well, what's going on lately with you, Josh? What's your current... You haven't been doing stand-up.
Uh-huh.
In your room.
I'm just in my room. I'm just in the room. I turned the fans off. It's starting to get a little musty. Probably Bobby's like a little musty. I don't know. I've been getting some acting work here and there.
Yeah.
And
you're a great actor.
Thank you.
I think that I don't tell anyone to stop performing live. I think that.
I mean, it's not like I've quit forever. It's just sort of like, also, that's another thing I feel like, you know, you talked about like taking a writing job and then, and you're like, oh, I don't perform. And there is something about like performing, like if you take a break, you got this voice in the back of your head that's like, some meathead, you know, telling you like, oh, you're not hit pounding the pavement. You know, and you're like, who are you? Get out of here.
Where'd you come from?
I don't have time. I don't want to right now. I think I haven't wanted to during the pandemic, but I wrote a couple scripts and like one of them, you know, is like a small movie I want to make in Oklahoma, you know? So I'm trying to figure out how to pull that off. And
From Tulsa?
I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I kind of been splitting my time between LA and Tulsa.
Oh, nice.
For family visits.
Yeah, my family's here. And, you know, that's another thing that's just like, well, pandemic, it's like you can do a lot of the stuff in LA, like do a great podcast from Oklahoma.
Karen and I have been doing the same thing. A lot of family time for months on end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about this 900-foot Jesus that someone had a vision of. What's that?
What is that? Isn't there a band or a band called MC 900 Foot Jesus?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was just like a Christian rapper. But there was
he a Christian rapper? I didn't know.
No, he's British.
Oh.
But MC 900 Foot Jesus.
He's British, mate. He rapping like a British, mate.
Yeah. He is? Or is he thinking of the streets?
What's
I'm thinking of the streets.
You think you're so fit? Don't you know it?
I actually liked him a lot.
I like that song, but I don't know any other the streets songs.
Well, what's Orville Robert? Oral Roberts?
Orville the car? Roberts in Tulsa. Yeah. Yes, Oral Roberts University.
That he is the guy that had a vision of, and I remember he was quoted saying, I was seeing eye to eye with a 900-foot Jesus. And I'm like, what? Was he laying down? How would you be eye to eye with a 900-foot Jesus? That's all I remember. It was like everything he said was it didn't even make sense.
I think he was famously like, if I don't get this much money by this amount of time, Jesus is going to take me away. Please.
Yeah.
Did it work?
I think he got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jesus didn't take him. But I think Jesus did eventually take him.
Has Jesus taken him? And do we know it was Jesus and not Satan?
Oh, I hope it wasn't the devil himself.
It could have been the devil coming up from below.
In Tulsa, they've recently opened the Bob Dylan Center. A Bob Dylan museum where his archives were donated. And it's pretty cool.
That is cool.
And last time I went to Tulsa, it washed away all the dirty feelings of performing at the Tulsa Comedy Club.
Yeah, it's gotten better. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
So great.
In Tulsa.
I loved it. What a sweet audience that was. What a great. Yeah. You're there now then.
Yeah, I'm there right now. Probably be in LA in like 2 weeks. But I'm just kind of hanging around, you know, doing
We should get
whatever.
Lunch, Josh.
Yes, let's get lunch. Let's get a Reuben.
I mean, people are going back out. Things are starting to open up.
I got all my boosts.
We've been boosted.
We boosted. I got every boost.
I would love to see you in real life, Josh.
I know. It would be great.
Yeah.
It'd be so nice. Sorry, really quick. MC 900 Foot Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
My full apologies to Mark Griffin, who is MC 900 Foot Jesus. He was not only American, he's from Kentucky.
I just know the music video was him in a cardboard box, and as he recorded the video, he was rolling around in a box, and it looked really painful.
Oh yeah, I do remember that. It's one of those ones that's like you say the name of it, I'll probably here's how the whole song goes. But you know,
I'm going straight to heaven.
I don't know.
See, Christian.
He has a song called "Too Bad Shut Up," which I enjoy. That's funny.
I don't know that either.
It doesn't have its biggest hit.
There's a song called "If I Only Had a Brain."
Had a brain.
I think
that's it.
I can't remember how it goes. I keep wanting to sing Skilo's hit song, you know, because
I wish I had a brain. I wish I had a basketball. Yeah. I wish I had an Impala. I was taller.
Yeah, Skilo's thing, because it's like 900 foot Jesus. He's pretty tall. But Skilo wishes that he could be just a little bit taller.
A little bit taller, 901.
Yeah.
He wants to be a 901-er.
Yeah.
Oh, if I had a girl, I would call her.
Yeah.
Oh,
very really sweet.
But then he wants a rabbit and a hat and a 6'4 Impala. A rabbit in a hat.
Yeah.
That's a weird lyric.
I mean, I think at that point, he's just running out of wishes and he feels like I have a lot of pressure to make more wishes.
He's
looking around the magic shop. Yeah. What should I wish for now?
I was a little bit taller for one. I wish
I had a squirting flower.
Yeah.
I wish I had some trick gum.
Yeah. I wish I had some new insoles because I think I've got bunions coming on. I guess I could go get that. I don't need to wish for it.
Yeah, he's wishing for logical things that are under $10.
He's wishing he could go to CVS is what he's really wishing for.
Yeah. I wish I had a CVS instead of a Duane Reade because I prefer the CVS to that.
I like the longer receipts. Yeah. That's what I prefer.
Because those coupons, I take advantage of them.
Oh. Five for 10? Josh, I can't believe this... Sometimes we say this. This time, I really mean it. That was an hour that went by like 15 minutes.
Really?
Very quickly.
Wow.
Yes.
This was a lot of fun. I'm like, oh, wow, I guess we are wrapping it up, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean,
should.
And then you can turn on your air conditioner. Take the fan to blow the secondary wind from the air conditioner. Whatever
Your systems that you had set up, we made you
Goldberg,
shut down.
Cooling system.
I got a lot of DVD. Oh, you know what else I did during the pandemic? We don't need to get into this rabbit hole, but you're like, figuring the question, what else you're up to? I watched during the lockdown year and have continued to remain obsessed with a lot of film noir from the 40s and 50s.
Really?
I got real obsessive and I just kept watching till I watched over 300 of them from the black and white ones. So I'm real into that. Eddie Mueller from TCM. I don't know him, but he's my main man. I'm a big fan.
Best.
If I saw him, I'd be starstruck. I always want to talk to him, too. Me, too. I love Ben Mankiewicz.
Yeah.
I tweet to him sometimes. He replied a few times. I think he started getting annoyed, but he did follow me back.
But I bet he didn't get annoyed. I bet he did. My friend Millie Cherico, who has a podcast on our network, she is the programmer for the late night of TCM.
Oh, the Underground?
Yep, that's her. She picks those movies. I
want to talk to Millie.
What
does she have her podcast about? Those movies?
It's called I Saw What You Did.
Uh-huh.
And Millie and
based
woman
off the William Castle title.
Wow. Yes. Movie? Yep. Yes. And they basically do double features where they pick two movies and then you have to guess what the theme is between the two. And then they basically talk about them. And Millie is the cinema expert and Danielle is just the person who likes movies.
They just talk about
really
it with each
anything.
Other or they have guests on there too?
They've had a couple of guests, but for the most part,
no
it's
room
just the
for
two
me to
them.
Get in there.
No.
You could get in.
You'd be great.
I could be a special guest sometime.
I will absolutely. Yeah. If I texted Millie, because Millie is best friends with April Richardson.
Okay.
So I'm sure she knows who you are. So I'm sure they would love to have you.
Well, there was a couple of those, you know, they do those, here's why underground movies are so fun and great type promos, which I love I love everything about TCM. I didn't like when they did a redesign recently, but now I'm okay with it. But
you just had to get used to it.
That's it. That's it. And you know what? Ben Mank even said, he made a whole spiel. You just got to get used to it. Or he said, I know you don't like change. Or something like that. But yeah, I also have been trying to get a Ben Mank impression down where he's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the film facts, blah, blah, and then he finishes that and he goes, from 1947. he always takes a good pause before he goes, from 1947. Here it is, whatever.
He winds up, it's the wind up in the pitch.
Yep. I love Ben Mank. I think that the movie Mank should have been about Ben Mank.
I am a huge fan of both Mankiewicz brothers, Josh, who is on Dateline, and Ben.
Uh-huh.
But TCM is when my dad and I are like, have to be together for an extended period of time, like we go on vacation or something, or I'm staying at his house. TCM is what we can watch together, no matter what. Because if it's some old movie, he'll be sitting there going, you know, this guy fought in World War II. Like he always has some sort of like 50s trivia.
Shoot, I want to do a podcast with your dad.
He would be pretty great at it. It would be pretty funny.
I'd be like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. I'd be just trying to keep up. Yeah, I knew that, actually.
I always go, oh, really? And then look at my phone again. But it's, first of all, I love that they don't have commercials. I think that's like the greatest thing of all time. You don't have to worry about commercials.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, it's the best. And they just roll movie after movie, and they explain, Ben Mankiewicz at the beginning explains why you're going to love this movie, what's great about it, how some weird thing that happened when they were filming it, what it was like in the era. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an education. It's really cool.
Yeah. They have a good approach to also, like, you know, movies that would be canceled or something today, you know. That's a slang term that I'm like, I say it, but I don't even... I don't want to say it. It's just that's the easy word to say.
Yes.
You know.
Right.
But they always say, well, here's why you don't cancel it, you know, in their good flowery TCM talk. But they do it well. They say, here's what, and we're gonna show it, and you're gonna like it and appreciate it for what it is. Don't be so hard on it for today's standards or whatever.
Oh, there's like a disclaimer that
sometimes they do a disclaimer, but I think they do it. They do it softly. They do it. They don't do it like they don't condemn what they're going to show. You know, they don't say they don't condemn the viewer for wanting to watch old movies, you know, or whatever. It's just the context sort of a thing, I think.
Right. It's kind of like there if there's a movie that's all about a woman, you know, like, you know, a woman being tossed between, you know, like she's supposed to be the wife of this person or that, you know, whatever. Then they're like, it's of the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like, it's very reflective of what it was like in 1934 or whatever.
Occasionally they will do something that if I'm like trying to find a criticism, they might like, it's like, they might do something that's like, not a stretch, but it's like, you don't need to, do we have to tell today's audience that like, just to make them interested? Like, you really got to explain to me that Sam Fuller is a feminist or something like that. You know, it just feels like, just show the movie, you know, the smart people will get it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You can't rely on people being smart, I guess.
Not even TCMers.
No, not especially not the TCMers.
No.
They have to fill that, like, there's the 10 to 15 minutes between when they, you know, changing reels or whatever between from movie to movie. Whereas I would love it if you just went from one to the other.
Yeah.
Just like rolled on through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the Doors song, To the Other Side.
That's right. Exactly. Roll on through to the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Josh, you're the best, buddy.
This was so fun, and thanks for having me, and thanks to, Better Call Saul, I'm on it.
Yeah, you're good on it.
Yeah.
And,
a great show.
At the end of this, I always say you've been listening to Do You Need a Ride, D-Y-N, A-R.
A-R!
But can you do it, Josh, as Werner Herzog?
Okay, I don't think my Herzog impression's any good anymore. See, that's what happens when you don't do stand-up anymore. You think
when you don't pound the pavement.
You think you don't pound it, you're going to lose your Herzog impression. You have been absorbing the sounds of Do You Need a Ride here today on this podcast network. There's only one way to listen if you are having a ride. If there's no ride, then you will have an overwhelming sense of loss and lack of direction, which will sink you into an abysmal crying in your pillow depression. There's no way out except to get a ride with Do You Need a Ride?
D-Y-N-A-R!
That's perfect.
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's D-Y-N-A-R Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.